but I think we're now joined by Zafar Bengash, Crescent International. Are you there, Zafar?
Yes. Hello, Phil. I am.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us. Before we get to the meat of the matter, do you have a new address for people to read and follow your work?
Yes, I guess they can come to our website, which is crescent.icit-digital.org.
And that and that's the website?
That's the website, yes.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you're probably the type of guy, if they write Zafar Bengash, they'll get there anyway. So we hope that people will turn to you. You wrote a book called The Doomed Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And it's looking a little more doomed this afternoon than it was in the last time. And by the way, even then it was shaky. So
yes.
I guess we'll just have to, and to, just to set this up, tomorrow, Tuesday, there does seem to be a speech expected by the president of Turkey,
yes,
which the
is.
World will be listening very, very closely.
Yes, he has promised, President Erdogan of Turkey has promised that he is going to reveal the details of what the Turks know about that gruesome murder mm-hmm. in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul that occurred on October the 2nd. As I'm sure most of your listeners would be familiar, that for 15 days, the Saudis kept on denying that Jamal Khashoggi, who of course was a columnist for the Washington Post, they kept on denying that he had been murdered or harmed at the consulate. And in fact, a day after the story broke out that he had been murdered, that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman stated quite categorically that he'd been there only for a few minutes or maximum an hour, and then he left the consulate.
Mm.
And, of course, there were immediate calls to say, well, if he has left the consulate, then provide us proof. And the Turks, meanwhile, the Turkish government, that is, kept on leaking very, very damaging information mm-hmm. With respect to what had happened. Some of their investigators said that they had collected samples from the sewers connected to the consulate, which obviously indicated that they had collected blood samples because mm-hmm. The journalist was murdered over there.
Mm-hmm.
They had also released information that 15 Saudi operatives had come to Istanbul on two separate flights, private planes from Riyadh that morning, and they had entered the consulate. And among them were certain individuals that are very, very close to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. One of them is actually a forensic expert, a 20-year veteran at the Saudi Interior Ministry. He was the main culprit. His name is Salah Mohammed Al-Tubaygi. He was the one who brought the bone saw. And according to the information that the Turks have leaked, that Jamal Khashoggi was actually cut to pieces while he was still alive.
Mm.
And he was this ritual was performed on the consul general's study table. And this man, Tubaygi, told the other people with him, among them is an intelligence agent by the name of Mahir Mutrib, who had served in the Saudi embassy in London back in 2007. He's an intelligence agent. There's a personal bodyguard of Mohammed bin Salman as well, who was also part of the entourage of these 15 people. And Tubaygi told these people that when I do this work, when I do this job, I put on my earphones and listen to music. Because obviously they were cutting this man to pieces alive, like they first cut his fingers, then they cut his arms, and then they started to chop him up. And the Turks have said that this it took 7.5 minutes for this man to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were chopping him up while he was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the Turks have said, and I mean, of course, the story they put out was that this was all recorded from the Apple Watch that Khashoggi was wearing. I believe that that's a sort of deflection. The real thing is that the Turks definitely had surveillance cameras at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. both audio and video, and they basically captured all of that. The audio they have released to some of the newspapers over there, for instance, Sabah newspaper in Turkey, as well as Yeni Şafak. These are two papers that are close to the government. Both have carried out details, and now we await what Erdogan has to say tomorrow. But I also want to add that gruesome as this murder is, it seems to me that both the Americans as well as the Turks, Erdogan in particular, they are playing this game. They want to basically trade Khashoggi's murder for some financial benefits. So the Americans have their own plan. The Turks have their own plan. And let's see, we'll see whether Erdogan is going to reveal any information or any significant information tomorrow. Because what I suspect is that perhaps, I mean, he could have done that yesterday, for instance, but he said, I'm going to do it on October the 23rd. Now, I suspect that this was a message to the Saudis that whatever he is demanding, if they don't comply with, then he's going to begin to reveal or release more information.
He has a draft of two or three speeches.
Exactly.
Would you like speech number one? Speech
It'll cost
number
you
two.
So much if the speech number two will be this much, etc. So,
yeah.
and from what I have read and heard, that the Saudis offered him $1 billion. Then other figures that were mentioned was $5 billion. But obviously, he's aiming for much more. We need to keep in mind that when the Turks, when the Americans basically embargoed Turkey and the lira, the Turkish lira, went into a tailspin. That the Saudis were also part of that plot. They pulled out billions of dollars that they had invested in Turkey. And this money was actually invested back in May of 2011, and that was the bribe that was offered to the Turks by the Saudis to get them to do two things. Number one, to join the war on Libya and therefore destroy Gaddafi's government. And number two, to join the war on Syria, which, of course, in which they have failed. But these were the two things that were demanded of Turkey, and that was the $10 billion that the Saudis invested in Turkey. So when the Americans put sanctions on Turkey, the Saudis also pulled their money out of Turkey. So it precipitated a financial crisis inside Turkey. And now Erdogan is coming back and saying, okay, now we have you by the throat, and so now you either cough up or we are going to give up, release this other information. So let's see what happens tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it.
Everybody's, it's like a championship game.
Absolutely.
Because he's going to reset the agenda for everybody. The debates are going to go in a dozen directions.
Yes.
Mr. Erdogan has been himself a very unstable figure. Every time we interview you, actually, he's on a different tack.
Exactly.
And so, and I want to ask about this. Some months back, Trump invested heavily, and I shouldn't say Trump. The U.S. administration has been warm towards the Saudis. They were selling the Saudis as reformers and as the leading state in the region. And its job as a leading state was to remove the government in Damascus, and then more importantly, to get rid of the government of Iran, which the U.S., by the way, is accelerating that process. They're stepping it up. They are openly embracing the terrorist group from Iran that used to be harbored by Saddam Hussein, and all of their leaders speak to that group and embrace them publicly. But this is a shambles, is it not, for this whole for that game?
Yes, of course. What has happened is that Trump also is playing a very devious role over here. On the one hand, he's trying to protect Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, by saying, well, like, and it was he who suggested that this probably was an operation carried out by rogue killers. These are his crosswords.
Yes.
And, of course, the Saudis then, 2 days ago, that's the story they put out, that The Crown Prince did not know about this. He was not aware of this. And yet yesterday, the Turkish newspaper Yeni Şafak came up with a story, and they said that before Khashoggi was killed, he had been made to speak to the Crown Prince on this guy's cell phone, this guy Maher Mutrib, who incidentally has now been put in prison, and most likely he will be killed because he obviously some of
the, I would say if he's lucky.
Exactly. There are going to be a few people that definitely the Saudis would like to get rid of immediately because they know all the things and they get rid of them, then obviously there's nobody, as they say, dead men don't speak. And so that story, you know, their information would be buried with them. Now, Yeni Şafak said that the Crown Prince spoke to Khashoggi, and in fact, the conversation that went was that the Crown Prince told him to come back to Saudi Arabia, and Khashoggi declined because he feared that if he went back, he would not only be arrested, but he would be killed. Mm-hmm. And I think he was right in that, but I mean, he didn't realize that if he refused to go, he'd be killed right there, and he'd be chopped up alive.
Well, by the way, he probably made a miscalculation in terms of his... He was friendly to the Turkish government. He must have assumed that he'd be fairly safe there because he'd also gotten himself an apartment there, right?
Yes, exactly.
Very foolish.
Yes. Well, that's the big mistake that he made. I think there are a number of people that set him up, including the Saudi ambassador in Washington, who is the younger brother of the Crown Prince, the Saudi ambassador Khalid bin Salman. Because Khashoggi first went there to obtain his documents, divorce documents or papers from there, and he was told that they can't get him anything. He has to go to Istanbul because his fiancée is Turkish, and he has to get the documents there. So when he approached the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, he was told that they can't do anything, but they will pass this information on to the intelligence agency. And, of course, the intelligence agency called him, and they said they can arrange for it. It'll take about a week. So that was the fateful
day. Make sure you're there at 11.
Exactly. Absolutely. So he walked into his death den on October the 11th at 1:41.
Well, let's set the context a bit, you know, because, of course, it is a hideous story. But I've been looking at material that reminding us that Mr. Khashoggi, he's called a journalist now, and he spent 1 year at the Washington Post. Many Saudis, by the way, must have asked, how come he got that job if he was criticizing the reform leader of Saudi Arabia?
Exactly.
I have right in front of me, in the Washington Post, he wrote an article, and the title was, It's Time to Divide Syria.
Yes.
And that's July 3, 2018. He also said when Trump fired the missiles at Syria, he said, we are all with Donald Trump now.
Yes.
And about the Al-Qaeda people using beheading as a technique, he said that was a smart tactic.
Yeah.
And his name, I remember a famous arms dealer involved with Iran and Reagan and the Contra business in Nicaragua. His name was Adnan Khashoggi. Are they related?
That was his father.
That's his father.
So it's a small world.
Yeah, he's a journalist, right?
Well, you're right.
So he might know a little something about hardball.
Yes, exactly. See, this guy, Jamal Khashoggi, has been an apologist for the Saudi regime for decades. He served with the former Saudi intelligence chief, Turki Al-Faisal, who was the intelligence chief for 23 years, and then he was ambassador in London and then in Washington, D.C. And wherever Turki Al-Faisal went, Jamal Khashoggi went with him. Then Jamal Khashoggi also headed Al-Hayat newspaper, and more recently he was sort of, you know, head of a TV program, etc. So he's been an insider throughout. Now, you mentioned as to how come he got this job at the Washington Post. That's a very, very important point to note. The Washington Post, obviously, I think, you know, your listeners should know, has very deep CIA connections. Mm-hmm. So it was basically CIA that allowed him that space so that they could now use him. And there is one theory that is floating around, And that is that they basically, the CIA and Soros and others wanted to start a color revolution. Now, Jamal Khashoggi was going around the Middle East meeting important figures, and he was going to set up a group called Democracy for the Arab World Now, with an abbreviation DAWN, D-A-W-N. Mm-hmm. And so, and a lot of people had also paid him money to set up something like this, and his role was that he will collect these intellectuals, etc. Incidentally, a day or so before he went to the consulate on October the 2nd, he had had dinner with Azam Tamimi. Now, Azam Tamimi is a Palestinian exile living in London, but he's also part of this network. So it seems to me that he was basically, Jamal Khashoggi's task assigned to him by the CIA was to set up this thing to bring about a color revolution in Saudi Arabia and to put somebody in power, possibly the former crown prince, Mohammed bin Naif, who had been unceremoniously dismissed, who had very close CIA connections. Mm-hmm. And so they probably wanted to bring Mohammed bin Naif back into power because the CIA felt more comfortable with him because he was just as ruthless, but much more.
By the way, they can't. They just have itchy fingers, don't they? I mean, these intelligence guys, because you and I spoke earlier about this, and throughout history it's been noted. The U.S. and the British have a kind of warehousing for people who could be the leaders of various countries.
Exactly.
And they live in and around, the CIA headquarters in Virginia.
Yes.
Foggy Bottom, or whatever it's called. And then the British have this as well, where there are princes and would-be monarchs. And at any moment, they can say to a head of state, you know, we're not too happy with you, and we do have Prince so-and-so living right down the road here.
Yes.
In the case of President Edoyan, he wants to know why the U.S. harbors a man named Gulen. Is that his name?
That's correct.
Who has...
Abdullah Gulen, yes.
Who was the figure behind the... It appeared to be a coup, an attempted coup. And you know, while they are used and the border is open for terrorists to enter Syria from Turkey, and while Saudi Arabia finances people who go into Syria and create mayhem, at the same time, they have to kind of watch their backs because the U.S. seems to be having a backup quarterback, they would say, in football.
Yes, yes. Now, you see, as we speak right now, the U.S. is supporting and protecting these ISIS terrorists in Syria, and they, in fact, threatened even Russia that if ISIS positions are attacked, that there is going to be consequences, and that there are risks of Russia getting involved directly with America. So the Russians have unfortunately backed down from that, and so they have stopped their bombing raids of ISIS positions in Syria. Earlier on, you mentioned this group, Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, MKO terrorists. They are a well-known terrorist organization. They were on the State Department list until 2012. Mm-hmm. And then under lobbying from various Congress members as well as Hillary Clinton, etc., this group was removed from that terrorist list.
Unleashed.
Although they still continue to indulge in terrorist acts. Mm-hmm. And, as you mentioned, top officials, Rudy Giuliani, John Bolton, all of these people are regular...
Bolton,
yeah, exactly. They are regularly appearing on their conference.
And they are paid big bucks. So it's a deeply corrupt business as well.
Absolutely.
Everybody gets a little something, a little
exactly.
A little add-on, a little lanyap, as they say in New Orleans.
Yes, and Turki Al-Faisal is also a regular fixture on those on their conferences. So we see that all of these shady characters, this criminal enterprise, mm-hmm. is involved in backing these terrorists. Because they want to target Iran. And let me say this, that this organization, MKO, has absolutely zero support inside Iran. And so the best way to not go about overthrowing the government of Iran is to back these people. In fact, if anybody in Iran hears this name, because these people have perpetrated such horrible crimes in Iran, they've murdered more than 12,000 people, including top leaders, the prime minister, the president, chief justice, members of parliament, leading scholars, etc. The list is endless.
Yes.
That the people of Iran hate the MKO terrorists. And now they have, of course, realized even more that if the CIA is behind them, if the Americans are behind them, obviously these people are up to no good.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot be good. They just simply would not have them. And so, I don't know whosoever is whatever their thinking is, but
They call it thinking. Mad conspiracies would. By the way, everybody gets a living out of this, right? I mean, it's for Bolton. The bucks get bigger and bigger. The dumber he becomes.
Exactly.
They say, "Is there anybody dumb enough to say this?" They say, "Bolton will say it." Okay, pay him $1 million.
That's right.
But about the instability in the region and all of this, the great run up to destroy President Assad and the government of Syria, it all seems to be breaking into pieces. I noticed that the Arab League now is talking about asking Syria to rejoin. When they ran them out of the Arab League, now they're talking about bringing them back. And then today, the King of Jordan suddenly announces that he doesn't want to lease property to Israel anymore.
Yes.
So everybody must be very scared.
Of course they are, because this whole situation relating to Jamal Khashoggi, etc., is blowing up in their face. It's not working out the way they had thought. And so everybody is trying to protect their backside. And as you said, the Arab League is now thinking about inviting Syria back. During the UN session last month, the Arab League Secretary General actually met the Syrian Foreign Minister at the UN, and they had a pleasant conversation. And so did the Bahraini Foreign Minister. Now, this is the first time that the Bahrainis, who are part of the Saudi camp and this part of the conspiracy group trying to overthrow the government of Bashar al-Assad, that they are now reaching out to the Syrian government, because they have realized that they burnt their fingers in Syria, that they are not going to be able to succeed. And so the best thing is to cut their losses and try to make up now.
But by the way, now that raises, I had heard the same rumors about MBS that they said he didn't veto. Apparently, Saudi Arabia had veto on a lot of this, but they stopped vetoing people. But that brings us to another outfit. I shouldn't call them this. Qatar.
Yes.
Now, is Qatar still the homeland of the hard line? Are they going to let's get Iran? I should back up. The Saudis accuse them of being nice to Iran. Maybe it's only the Saudis left. What is Qatar's position on all these things?
Well, Qatar has actually remained absolutely silent about this. They have not said anything, although their station Al Jazeera has been releasing leaks off and on regarding the Khashoggi story. There was a meeting in New York arranged by Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State, and he had gathered all of these Arab foreign ministers, including Qatar, because basically Qatar had been ostracized by Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, and Egypt, of course. And Pompeo got them together to see if they could, patch up things, but it didn't work out. And of course, there was this other plan that they're going to make an Arab NATO army. And they're going to meet again in January.
Yes.
But I think that's all now down the drain because of these recent developments. So that wouldn't fly anywhere.
Yeah. So they probably ought to stop posing for ghoulish photographs. All of them holding the world and lighting the room up with their faces. Zafar Benghazi, the book is the doomed kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
The House of Saudi.
The
House of Saudi.
The House. Well, tomorrow, Erdogan will give a speech, and maybe they'll blow the windows out of the house, I guess.
Well, let's see what happens. I'm now really very tempted to write another one to catch up with all these latest developments, but they're moving so fast that I can't keep up with them.
I think you will have to write a new one because, here's the deal. Once you predict something and it happens, you also have to write after that. You can't retire.
You know, you will recall some years ago when we had talked, this was in 2016, and I had said that there is a good possibility that a coup attempt may be made in Turkey, and within 2 weeks there was a coup attempt.
Yeah. No, you have those powers. We're very appreciative. Zafer Bengash, Crescent International, thank you very much.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.